You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. More assessments of the Celoragate affair with a side trip to Pearl Harbor. Shareholders opened a class action suit against SolarWinds, but no signs of an enforcement action for speculated insider trading. Emissary Panda seems to be working an APT side hustle. Kevin McGee has insights from the Microsoft Digital Defense Report. Our guest is Jason Passwaters from Intel 471 with a look at the growing range of ransomware as a service offerings. And to-ing and fro-ing on Chinese telecoms at the New York Stock Exchange. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Tuesday, January 5th, 2021. Qualys offers a look at the back door installed in the Celoragate cyber espionage operation. They draw particular attention to the malware's evasiveness and use of domain generation algorithms. Their concluding assessment is about as gloomy as might be expected. Quote, "In the end, we can conclude that the techniques which the attackers have used in this breach are very sophisticated. Supply chain compromise, data encoding, impaired defenses, and dynamic resolution, to name a few. Instead of doing major damage to the infected system, the attackers have focused on staying unnoticed from security products. In the coming days, we can expect to see widespread use of similar attacks." End quote. A ZDNet op-ed throws its hands up and declares the SolarWinds software supply chain cyber espionage campaign to be worse than imagined. Assessing just how bad it is would require more understanding of the incident and its effects than is now publicly at least available, but consensus remains that it's pretty bad. IronNet offers a set of expert takes on why this form of cyber espionage, more than an ordinary data breach, has the potential to serve as preparation for more serious attacks later. A lot of people continue to call this a cyber Pearl Harbor or a cyber 9/11, but these metaphors still seem wayward. Thousands were killed at Pearl Harbor and on 9/11, but as far as anyone knows, there have been no physical casualties attributable to the SolarWinds hack. so it's probably best to reserve the Pearl Harbor talk until, heaven forfend, people are actually killed or injured on a large scale by a cyber attack. So why have intelligent observers been willing to talk about a cyber Pearl Harbor? In truth, this campaign is more worrisome than ordinary collection. The threat actors corrupted a software supply chain and quietly established persistent backdoors in organizations that use that supply chain. This makes it possible, perhaps even likely, that the effort amounts to battlespace preparation, the staging in cyberspace of capabilities that could be deployed in attacks having widespread effect, including kinetic effects. So it amounts to more than just knowing that USS Pennsylvania was in dry dock and that USS West Virginia, Oklahoma, Arizona, California, Maryland, Tennessee, and Nevada were at their moorings on Battleship Row. But it's far less than the appearance over Oahu of Cates and Vals from the First Air Fleet. Not yet a cyber Pearl Harbor, but it's not just collection as usual, either. SolarWinds shareholders have filed a class action suit against the company, whose Orion software has been at the center of the eponymous cyber espionage incident. The plaintiffs allege, Fox Business reports, that the company misrepresented and failed to disclose information about the incident, and this amounted to failing its duty to disseminate accurate and truthful information. The harm is alleged to be, first, reputational, as both the company and its shareholders look bad, and second, financial, as the suppression of bad news is alleged to have artificially inflated the company's stock. It was bound to come crashing back to Earth once the air was out of the balloon. The plaintiffs also allege that SolarWinds executives had actual knowledge of the material omissions and/or the falsity of the material statements, and that, worse yet, they intended to deceive plaintiff and the other members of the class, or, in the alternative, acted with reckless disregard for the truth when they failed to ascertain and disclose the true facts in the statements made by them or other SolarWinds personnel to members of the investing public. They're not asking for a specified amount, but rather for reasonable costs and expenses incurred, like spending on legal counsel and various experts, as well as whatever additional relief the court should judge appropriate. SolarWinds hasn't, as far as we've seen, commented directly on the lawsuit, but its representatives are making the right pacifying noises about working with law enforcement and intelligence agencies to get to the bottom of the incident, and about doing everything it can to identify, remediate, and mitigate this sort of risk, including its effects on third parties. At the close of trading yesterday, SolarWinds shares were priced at $14.53, a 34% drop-off since the incident came to light. It's worth noting that the class action lawsuit against SolarWinds isn't about suspicion that company insiders traded to their advantage on non-public information. The plaintiffs assert that they were misled, that the company's valuation was artificially inflated, and that, had they had an accurate picture of the business, they wouldn't have bought the stock. Simply Wall Street observed back on November 19th, well before the news of the cyber espionage came to public attention, that SolarWinds insiders had for some time been selling rather than buying shares. That's not at all criminal or even unseemly, but it's a data point outside investors find interesting. But one large sale in December did raise retrospective suspicions. Silver Lake and Thoma Bravo on December 7th sold some $315 million of SolarWinds stock to the Canada Pension Plan Investment Board. FireEye disclosed an incursion on December 8th, and SolarWinds disclosed on December 14th that the company had been apprised of the incident. This raised eyebrows, as Axios reported on December 18th, that some investors may have traded on non-public knowledge of the problem. SolarWinds denied this and was publicly backed by the CPPIB, so that story hasn't shown legs, at least not in the present lawsuit. Chinese threat actors may be involved in an APT side hustle. Researchers at Profero and Security Joes say they found Emissary Panda, the Chinese state-run threat group, also known as APT-27, conducting ransomware attacks. Their attribution is based on code similarities and TTPs, but they caution that all such attribution carries an inevitable degree of uncertainty. Most ransomware strains have by now evolved information-stealing capabilities, so the ongoing campaigns may represent a twofer, self-funding intelligence collection. The principal objective is intelligence collection, with any ransom representing so much gravy, perhaps to fund the operation, or perhaps as an incentive to the operators running the campaign. The New York Stock Exchange's on-again, off-again delisting of three major Chinese telecommunications companies in response to U.S. sanctions has roiled the market for China Mobile, China Telecom, and China Unicom shares. The Wall Street Journal reports that share prices fell between 3 and 6% in trading yesterday after news broke that the New York Stock Exchange would delist the three companies in compliance with a U.S. executive order blocking, on security grounds, Americans from investing in them. But late yesterday evening, the exchange said it had reconsidered, and after consultation with various regulatory authorities, would continue to list the company's shares. CNBC speculates that the NYSE is counting on the Biden administration to take a more Irenic approach to Sino-American relations, and of course, the security implications of those regulations. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit CriticalStart.com and request a demo today. That's CriticalStart.com. The ransomware criminal marketplace continues to expand its offerings, and it's noteworthy that ransomware as a service is a growing trend, providing the opportunity to do online crime to those who may not have the technical know-how to roll their own. The team at threat intelligence firm Intel 471 have been tracking the evolution of this trend. Jason Passwaters is chief operating officer and co-founder of Intel 471.
Yeah, I think it just goes back to, you know, the days of Zeus and the kind of professionalization or the kind of productization, if you will, in the malware space. And, you know, as folks made more and more money, they saw the kind of, you know, the ROI there. And they've really kind of defined and matured a business model around it. And that's what you see today is a business model at play that has, you know, resiliency built in. It's got, you know, all kinds of stuff like support, everything you see in a typical business, but obviously doing much more nefarious things.
Well, let's walk through that business model together. I mean, suppose I'm someone who has my sights set on sending some ransomware out into the world, but I don't have the technical skills to do it. Where do I begin?
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, you hear deep and dark web often. I don't really see it as deep and dark. It's a very well-organized, quote, marketplace. And it is really organized in a kind of a product, services, and goods model. And then you have consumers, obviously. So first place you would look is, you know, in the marketplace. It's not every low-level threat actor can get involved into a ransomware affiliate right away, but they might start with, you know, doing kind of low-level, you know, hacks or selling of accesses into different organizations or companies. And that might be their pivot point into the ransomware as a service space.
And who are some of the big players here that you're tracking in this space?
Yeah, so there's a lot of things popping up. We have a model for pretty much everything in the marketplace. Like I said, it's broken down into products, services, and goods. So we have this model, a tiered kind of setup, where if we're looking at a specific service or a specific product or some specialty or focus area in the marketplace, we break it down into tier 1, 2, and 3. You know, the big players are going to be, you know, your Egregor, your Doppelpaymer, NetWalker, Revil, as well as the Ryuk and Conti side.
So do you suspect that it's certainly in the short term, I suppose, that this model is here to stay?
I do. I think the criminals, you know, have the ability to change faster oftentimes. But, you know, that I believe is where the intel, the threat intel industry can kind of, you know, play a large role into keeping abreast of what's going on, keeping up with the adversary, and then constantly making sure that their business is informed so they can make decisions to keep pace.
That's Jason Passwaters from Intel 471.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Kevin McGee. He's the Chief Security and Compliance Officer at Microsoft Canada. Kevin, it's great to have you back. I want to touch today on a report that you all recently put out. This is the Microsoft Digital Defense Report. First of all, let's start with some high-level stuff here. What prompted the creation of this report?
I think really the new reports are a reimagining of the Microsoft Security Intelligence Report called SIR that a lot of your listeners are probably familiar with because we've been publishing it since 2005. And the SIR report was really operationally focused. And this new iteration will be more focused on sort of strategic threat intelligence, you know, providing greater contributions across the company. We have 77 countries represented. So a truly global perspective and providing, you know, strategic threat intel that leaders really need to make better informed decisions.
Well, let's go through it together. I mean, what are some of the things that caught your eye?
Well, I think just from a high level, you know, regardless of what company you work for in the industry, we're all defenders and we're all part of a larger community with a shared mission. And, you know, as defenders, we're better when we have a more complete view of the evolving techniques of the threat actor. So that's what we're really trying to provide in this report. And we've broken it into three areas that we found were most relevant to decision makers. And that's cybercrime, nation state threats, the current remote workforce. And then we include also some actionable learnings that we've taken from the report. So not only can you read the report as a decision maker, there's real concrete things you can do to improve your security posture included in the report as well.
Well, let's go through each of those categories together. Can you give us some highlights from each section?
Yeah, I think in the cybercrime, the things that really jumped out at me that I like to discuss with non-technical people, either policymakers or business leaders, is we're moving away from an infrastructure-focused attacks to identity and applications. That's really what we need to be protecting now. We're also seeing cyber criminals follow the issues of the day, so we can literally map, you know, things that are happening in the news headlines to evolving tactics and how threat actors are changing how they perceive attacks and how they administer attacks. And then finally, there's a human element that we're starting to see introduced into attacks now that's really changing how we defend and how we need to think about attacks. So we don't think about a RIOC attack anymore. We're very focused on this sort of media-driven narrative of the attack that names it via the tool. And we're seeing a switch to more of a human-operated cyber attacks and cyber crime, where at each point in the attack, a decision is made on how best to proceed next. So they're getting much more sophisticated. They're using multiple tools. And the best example I really use to think about this differently is, you know, we've for a long time focused on deflecting the arrows. And now we have to start thinking about the archer, which is the threat actor, and how we can position our security posture and make better decisions based on the threat actors most likely to attack us rather than the actual tools they're using.
Yeah, that's a really interesting analogy. What are you tracking on the nation state trends?
Many of the trends really are attractive, similar with other organizations out there that are doing research work. But we're seeing a lot of overlap now. I think that's what our report really is the message we're trying to land in, that nation states are adopting a lot of the tactics that cyber criminals are using. And cyber criminals are actually evolving to the level where they're mounting attacks at the size and complexity of nation state actors. So you need to really start thinking about, again, not the tool that's going to attack you, or preparing for defense posture that is on the ransomware of the day or whatnot as well. But really start to think with your business or your organization, you know, who are those threat actors like most likely to attack me? And how are they interacting, you know, with cyber criminal ecosystems that are providing them with the tools, or with nation states where they're emulating those type of attacks to evolve how they're really mounting their attacks on organizations?
And then what were some of the other bits of information that you gathered here? What were some of the other highlights?
So I think, again, we're seeing this attacks where cyber criminals are actively making decisions as they go. They're controlling each step of the attack based on the configurations and defenses they encounter in the network. So they'll do quite a bit of reconnaissance. They maybe use a open source tool like Mimikatz to harvest credentials. Then based on the reconnaissance, they may use a different payload for ransomware or whatnot, or a different tactic once they're in your network to maximize their leverage, to maximize their take, or to maximize their political goal, whatever they're really attempting to do. So we're seeing attackers persist longer in your environment, really to gain that understanding, to conduct reconnaissance, so that they can make the best decisions to achieve their outcomes.
All right. Well, the report is the Microsoft Digital Defense Report. Kevin McGee, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Dave.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed when you care enough to give the very best. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Errol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Filecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.